So I have to.
We are live for live air. This is Geeks Unleashed. My name is Maud Garrett, Chief Bomb of Geek Bomb, and on the panel, other fellow bombshells, we have Taz.
Hey.
And we have Stardust.
Hello.
They are in Sydney, Australia. I am in LA. So is our beautiful, wonderful, amazing guest. You may have stumbled across the many memes that flourished the internet in 2012 when his mohawk became the talk of topics and conversation. And it still does to this day. I have to change my accent to say his name. So, Babak, hello. How are you?
Oh, thank you. Lovely. Hi.
Babak. Otherwise, you can see on his Twitter handle if you want to live tweet with us as well. We will be taking your questions, so make sure that you comment in because we'll be throwing to them in a little bit. But usually with Geeks Unleashed to kick things off, we do quick fire. Can't say that today. Quick fire questions where I ask three things to Babak and then Babak has to ask three things to another person. And so
this is like a drinking game.
Yeah, and you have to answer the question as quickly as possible. So,
at least I don't have to answer the question with another question.
No.
Okay.
This is all about you. Are you ready?
Sure.
Out of all the video games in the world, what game have you played for the longest amount of time?
World of Warcraft.
Oh, what was your rank in class?
I was an 85 rogue. Yeah.
There you go.
A lot of hours. A lot of Flash played.
When was the moment in your childhood where you realized that you loved space so much that you had to follow a career path in it?
It was July 4th, 1997, and not just because that's an American holiday, but also because that's when we landed Mars Pathfinder on Mars. It was the first time I saw pictures, you know, coming down live from another planet. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Wow, I can't believe you have the actual date. I thought you were joking. Well, actually, it was July 4th. I'm like, here we go. Oh, no, you missed. Okay. And the last question is, what color are your underpants right now?
They are black.
Black shirt.
I look down. I gave it away.
Are you wearing pants?
I'm wearing shorts.
Okay. So that's three questions. You can think of anything. There's no kind of rules that are out of bounds, really, with this, but play nice. You are asking your three questions to Taz.
Okay. Taz, I'm going to ask. Behind you, can you read the Japanese on that poster?
Oh, wait. Is that me? Because I'm not Taz, I'm Lee.
Oh, sorry, Lee.
That's fine. Go with that one.
Yeah, I like that. I was like, what?
It's not Japanese, it's Chinese. It's a Chinese promotional poster for Star Wars. And I can't read Chinese.
Second question. Okay, I will get this correct now. Favorite thing about, or favorite planet other than Earth?
Nice.
Favorite planet, probably Saturn, because I used to like the fact that it had lots of moons, and, because does it have as many moons as Jupiter, or did it have more moons than Jupiter? Because I thought it was kind of boss that it had that many moons, and it was kind of like
a ton of small moons, yeah.
And that, for me, was kind of like king of the solar system, and it had the rings and everything, so I was like, yeah, it was pretty badass. So that was my favorite planet.
It's beautiful. Last but not least, if you could take one fictional character with you to a deserted island, who would the fictional character be?
These questions are so good! Better than mine.
Fictional character. Probably someone really good with a gun and who's really resourceful. So I can't really think of anyone.
No? Nobody?
The dude from Uncharted. There we go.
Nathan Drake.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Know what? If, you know, time's got a little bit lonely at nighttime, he's certainly not a bad person to share an island with, if you catch my drift.
I don't get it. But yeah.
This one! Lee, you are asking three questions to Taz.
Okay. Who would be your ultimate ultimate dinner date person that you would go?
Out of anyone ever?
Anyone ever.
Oh my God, how do you even answer that? Felicia Day, because she, I would like to have a conversation with her.
It's a great choice.
Yeah.
What is your favorite t-shirt that you own?
Oh my god, you're the worst. I don't know.
The Geek Bomb one that you can buy on store.geekbomb.net. Sorry.
Yeah, that's really cool. Those are pretty awesome t-shirts. Whoever designed those, man, sick.
Yeah, right.
Really good. I really like, I have my Quidditch jersey that has my name on the back. I really like that.
Oh, that's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's on my wall over there. That's why I'm thinking about it.
True story about Quidditch. I tried to get a little, I'm going to drop the name, Snitch, to one of the guys on the space station so they could actually play. Because I was like, they actually have no gravity. They could really play Quidditch on board the space station.
Yeah.
So I'm going to work on that for the next time. I missed this chance.
Right. That's so much more fun than running around on the ground with brooms. But I still do it. Yeah. I still do it.
But yeah, one more.
One more question. And I have one and now I've forgotten it. Favorite board game? I'm only saying that because Barback has tons of board games in the background.
Yeah. Ticket to Ride or probably Munchkin, but more likely Munchkin, just because I play it too much.
And you're good at it too.
Just a little bit.
Reigning champion 2013 over here on the panel, guys.
Hey, I have a trophy, okay? Don't make it like it's not a big deal.
It is a big deal!
It is.
I'll make t-shirts for that too, and then that'll be your favourite show. Now, Taz, you're asking me three.
Alright. If you could only eat one thing for the rest of your life, just like one ingredient, it can't even be a made food, what would it be?
Can I say cheese?
Cheese. I thought you would say that. Yeah, it's that makes
cheese.
Sense.
I'm so obsessed with cheese. I'm so embarrassed. I bought a block of cheese the other day after going to the gym, and I started eating the block of cheese.
Yeah.
Was it kind of like the picture from like the Faces of Walmart blog of like the wheelchair lady, and she's just biting into like a big block of like yellow cheese?
Yes.
Is it kind of like
and
that?
What cheese was it?
It was a Jarlsberg.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty easy to do.
Eat it like an apple, you know? Yeah. So, there you go. Fun fact, fatty.
That's cool. What video game sidekick would you like to have in real life?
Not Navi. Video game sidekick. God, I'm just trying to think of, like, famous kind of pairings. There's like Ratchet and Clank, there's, what are like the famous, Mario and Luigi, sorry Luigi, poor Luigi, he's just always getting shat on. I'd probably do Sheik, I'd have Sheik, where were we, right there, because it's also Zelda, so I get two for the price of one, and she's very good at just popping up whenever you're in a bit of trouble, and then she plays the harp. Like, that'd be great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, and lastly, if you had to live in a movie, you had to live the events of a movie, as in you take the place of one of the characters, what movie would it be, and what character would you be?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and I would be Sloane. Because that was just the cool... I mean, I've been to Chicago recently. It was okay, but I just think that those random, beautiful adventures that just... nonchalantly happen and end up being like the best day of your life. Like, I could totally get used to that. There you go. They are the quickfire questions. If you have any of those answers to those questions, make sure you comment below because it's also lovely getting to know you too. So, bye bye. God, this is exciting. You literally like get people excited about science. Like,
I hope,
you know,
so. I hope so. I mean, they should be. It's exciting. It's
like, I freaking love science, you know, Facebook pages, and then everyone's like, hashtag science porn, earth porn, all of that. You live that.
Yeah, on most days.
What is an average day like for you? And talk to us about, you know, being a jet propulsion engineer.
It's probably a little less exciting than most people think. So it depends what kind of, you know, where you are in the project. So, for example, right now I just started a new mission called Europa Clipper. And so it's all a lot of development, a lot of studies. We have meetings pretty often about, you know, what should this look like? How do we, you know, choose between one option or another option on how to design a spacecraft? When it was curiosity operations, of course, you know, you wake up and you have to look at the data from a spacecraft that's coming down and then plan the next day's worth of activities. So that's a little bit more, you know, dynamic, a little bit more maybe interactive. And then the other days are, you know, I guess not like unlike any other kind of office job. There's meetings, there's working on your computer. For me, I do a lot of coding and try to understand quantitatively how some of those trades can be made. So right now, one of the ones I'm working on is, you know, how much do you put in terms of communications on the spacecraft versus try to do here on Earth with our deep space network. So that's one example.
How many times does someone just form a vacant expression? Because what you are dealing with is something that no one even gets close to having to understand in their lifetime.
I don't think too often. I try to explain things in a way that hopefully people don't look blankly at me. But I think for the most part, people are excited about it. I think everybody has something about space or some story that gets them excited about science. And usually that's what, you know, it's kind of fun to chat with people about.
How much kind of preparation and studying has to go into this? Because I know that you studied at Washington Uni and then you went on to MIT. What kind of degrees does someone have to look into? Because I know that engineering is a, there's, in America, they're trying to expand the growth of engineering roles. I think it's like 1.2 million jobs, and you're trying to get them filled. So what do people have to do?
Well, so the great thing about engineering is it's not just engineers. I like the difference of personalities in people. So we have people, obviously there's engineers. My degree is in aerospace engineering. There's the whole, you know, gamut of engineers, including even civil engineers and folks like that who help develop some of the structures here on Earth. But you have, you know, human interface engineering, you have electrical, chemical, all the kind of engineering types. And then you have all these people who help us actually make it happen. I like to joke that if you gave engineers a task, we would probably just always run over budget and, you know, take years to do it. And there's people who help, you know, business people who help us plan out the schedule and cost. There's legal people who help us get patents or sometimes, you know, to write patents for new technologies. And then one of my favorites is, you know, there are people who have this amazing job at JPL of communicating the stuff that we do to an audience that, you know, that doesn't always, you know, immediately understand it or understand the implications. So they have, you know, degrees in writing, and we have a resident artist who comes up with amazing, like, displays of how is it that we find planets around other stars, and, you know, what does a comet look like, and you get to go and experience, you know, walk around inside of a comet and walking through the tail of a comet and feel what that's like. So some pretty great jobs.
How many times have you been to Griffith Observatory?
I've been there about 4 times in the 10 years or so that I've been here. I've been to Mount Wilson as well, which is up in the kind of the mountains here behind JPL.
Oh,
yeah, it's not as much of a touristy destination, but they do have a beautiful, I think, 60-inch telescope there, which you can see a lot of fun things.
Yeah. What's the best thing that you've ever seen?
So for me, I think I have this obsession still with planets, and I mean I love astronomy, and you know, sometimes when you see a really amazing shot and you realize that these are, you know, like a stellar nursery, for example, in Orion's belt, that's pretty amazing. But somehow to me, the idea of seeing like a moon of a planet, like I remember recently going out on the roof and seeing Europa, you know, around Jupiter, and realizing like there's a body of water underneath there, there's this possibility of life. That's kind of what I think the most mind-boggling part about space to me is all this opportunity out there for things to kind of be and exist, and that's usually what kind of blows my mind. But, you know, for every star that you see in the sky, there's, you know, there's probably planets around it, maybe a chance for life.
What is your, like, obviously you can make a really educated thought process with all of this, but where do you really see us going in 100 years' time, in 1,000 years' time? Like, will we have to move off to another planet potentially as a human civilization?
That's a good question. I mean, like, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, don't leave everybody here on Earth. I think that it's sort of in our nature to want to go elsewhere in the solar system, and hopefully, you know, if technology makes it outside of our solar system. I think it's just kind of a, you know, we are explorers. Certainly, you know, I want to be a part of that, or at least help make that happen. I don't know that I'll get to see, you know, the surface of Mars with my own eyes necessarily, but it'd be amazing if I could. But I think that, you know, in the 100-year time, I think being in space, the experience of that helps us be better custodians of our own planet. Because ultimately, you know, Earth is its own, albeit very large, spaceship. And you have to kind of, you know, take care of the water, you have to take care of the air and everything around you just, you know, in order for us to survive. I mean, the planet goes on without us. But otherwise, I think, you know, I would like to see us kind of take those maybe kindergarten steps out of Earth and, you know, look at the surface of another planet, try to live out there, and then, you know, who knows, maybe just try the kind of the old approach of sailing the oceans, but maybe sailing the, you know, the cosmos and seeing what kind of other places we can find, but not necessarily, you know, you don't necessarily communicate back, right? You think about the explorers who left, like, you know, the people who settled in Hawaii and things like that. They had no way of communicating back to their homeland. But nevertheless, they, you know, they went and lived there and made new homes. I kind of hope that's the case for us, too.
Do you think there is extraterrestrial activity?
I don't think that it's here on Earth. Or I think that, I'll put it this way, I think anybody who can make it all the way to Earth from wherever they are is smart enough not to get caught. But I think that there's almost certainly extraterrestrial life. I mean, just, you know, when you look at, like I said, you look at a star, and we're finding more and more all these planets around stars, you know, I feel like the odds are pretty good.
Because Stephen Hawking pretty much, I think it was Stephen Hawking anyway, he said that if there was extraterrestrial life out there, like, they'd probably come and, like, pretty much destroy Earth. Like, they'd be hostile. Like, do you think that would be the case? Because you kind of said that they'd be smart enough not to get caught, so would that mean, like, would they have, like, a sort of evil motive to want to come to Earth in the first place to not be sort of revealing themselves, or?
Well, it's, I mean, I, you know, it depends on what they're like. I'm a little more optimistic than Hawking. I think that, it, you know, if you're such a violent species, I feel like it would be very hard to make it past the point where you get to, like, nuclear material and not destroy yourself. At least that's my, you know, kind of hypothesis. But I could see it just like, you know, like us, you know, we're scientists. We want to look at a, you know, an animal in its natural habitat without disturbing it. You want to see how, you know, animals interact with each other and their environment around them. And I can kind of see that if I were an alien looking down on Earth, that I would want to see how these people played out their lives without, you know, poking the experiment or prodding the experiment in any way. But who knows? Maybe they have been, you know, poking around and seeing how we react to it.
Like, I don't know. Every time I go to Griffith Observatory, it's like anytime I'm having a bad day or I feel like I've got, you know, big problems, you go there and you just realize how small we are, yeah, how insignificant time is, and that what, you know, is important to us is not even a blip. Like, it's,
I think that it's really cool when you look at the stars and you look at, you know, go to the observatory and you look, and you kind of also realize that we have this unique perspective because of the, you know, the speed of light is finite. So when you see these things, you're realizing, like, this is, you know, billions of years old life that is just hitting, you know, us now. And you can imagine, like, somebody at that star looking at our, you know, our spot in the solar system billions of years ago, and they're not even being a planet necessarily here yet, right? So it's kind of crazy. But then, you know, you think, oh, okay, maybe they're closer, a few light years away, but maybe, you know, just now they're seeing the early 1900s, you know, here on Earth.
Oh, my God, I didn't even consider it like that.
Yeah. I always think, if you were the observer, what would you be seeing just now?
We've got some viewer questions that are flooding in. We've got one from Luke Harris. Hey there, Luke. He says, do you think that the media gives enough information about the kind of job that you do? And do you think that if there was more publicity with relevant information, people would want to do what you do?
I'd like to think that people would want to do what I do. I think it's a pretty fun job. You know, there's a lot of really, really great jobs. There's a lot of also people who, you know, love doing this kind of stuff. I think the highlight for me about the job is it's really the kind of people that you end up working with. And so it's nice to see, you know, the people around you kind of all be similarly motivated and excited about their job and, you know, looking forward to doing it. And so it doesn't have to be necessarily space or whatever, but obviously it certainly attracts a certain kind of person, I guess I've found. But yeah, I think, you know, I feel like the media is pretty good about it. It's hard. It's definitely different. We're not, you know, breaking news every day. So that's kind of the great thing about social media. I feel like you get a chance to interact with people through Twitter and Facebook and everything else. And you know, people who have questions can ask questions, and hopefully we can provide some answers. And that's kind of the cool thing about Curiosity is that, you know, the Curiosity Twitter has, I think, 1.5 million followers. I mean, there are people who are still actively seeing what, you know, the rover's up to, even though it's not news breaking every day. I think that's great.
Did you, and this is one of my questions in the Fun for Darcy facts, did you or someone in the team drive the rover around to put treadmarks on Mars in the shape of a penis?
So I've seen a couple of those photos. I think the one that made the rounds like a year ago was actually from the Spirit rover. So if you look carefully at the tracks, you can tell the difference between the rovers, because the 2003/2004 rovers don't have this. They have a unique pattern. There's a straight lines across, and then there's a sort of a grid section in the middle of that. And then if you look at our treadmarks, we have zigzag lines across, and then there is a section of like a bunch of looks like holes on the wheels. So those tracks aren't ours. It's not an unusual turn to do a little turn in place and then a straight line out, so it always looks a little phallic. But for us, I know that picture is not ours. But the cool thing is those wheels that we have, that hole pattern is actually Morse code for JPL. So we leave this little JPL mark in you know the regolith of Mars every time we drive. So that's how you can tell them apart.
You're right. You also leave your mark on your head as well. It's a bit of a trademark.
I've had the Morse code on the side of my head. I had some of our first findings, different numbers and symbols to represent some of the big tests that we've gone through. So it's been fun. I tried to do one for my friend when we first drilled on Mars, but we realized the drill also looks a little phallic. So didn't really want to walk around with that on the side of my head.
Dude, you got a dick on your head.
Yeah.
It's actually science, but whatever. We've actually got a few photos of the different hairstyles that you've been rocking. What was it like, though, when the whole Mohawk guy meme took off? Like, we blew up the internet and everyone...
It's really crazy.
You're on everyone's radar.
It's hard to describe the emotions associated with landing alone. I mean, for me, it was 8.5 years before we landed that I'd worked on Curiosity. For most people, you know, they've been on the project at least 3 or 4 years by the time that we had kind of seen a landing. And that's a very emotional experience. So it kind of puts so much into one moment. I guess, like, this is it. You know, I can imagine maybe programmers who see their video games go live for the first time kind of feel that way or things like that where you have years of work and then you're finally like, this is... Hopefully it all works. So that was kind of in itself a little bit like an interesting, you know, feeling. And then there was this, you know, waking up the next morning and going to work. And I remember I had volunteered for this morning shift of outreach, which was just basically like, hey, let's have people man the phones so that when, you know, the rover lands, we can have people talk to the press. And I show up and they're like, oh, people are calling for you. I'm like, don't really get it. And sure enough, and I started looking at Twitter, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. But it was so nice. Everybody was so positive. It was such a kind of and still is. I mean, people are still so positive. It's so great. I feel like people kind of connected to like a human element of it, and it's been really nice to, you know, I'm really proud of the work that we've done as a team, and it's been really nice to kind of be able to share that with everybody.
We're just going through some of the photos of your different
hairstyles.
Yeah,
I see that.
This is the
Mars
painted one. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the haircut, but the color as well, and then you'll kind of put in a little bit on the side. What are you rocking at the moment? You've matched.
There's nothing on the sides. It's just a clean slate, and then I have this kind of magenta pinkish color on top.
Is that for Geek Bomb?
It is. How did you guys know?
That's so sweet. Oh, no, actually. Making me
I love
look
you
bad. You're right. I love you guys. I want to know, like, how often do you get it done, and do you have, like, a particular hairdresser that you have obviously built up a great relationship with over these years?
I do. I probably get my haircut, like, every month, month and a half-ish. And then I've been going to the same girl for, I guess, 6 years now, Katie in Cabo, and she is awesome. She's here in Pasadena, and, you know, she moved salons. I moved with her. She's great. She's a salon here in Pasadena, and she kind of, like, you know, I give her, like, I'm like, oh, what do you think would be good? And then we'll come up, we'll brainstorm ideas, we'll make stencils sometimes to do stuff. She'll freehand sometimes, but it's cool to have somebody who also likes to have fun with your hair.
Is it almost to a point now where it's your trademark? So to do anything else but the mohawk, you would no longer be.
Oh man, I hope not. I really hope not. But I definitely don't think I want to be like a 50-year-old guy with a mohawk. So.
If you don't put product in it, can you literally part it down the middle, and can you?
I probably could. Just try that sometime. Just like a little bit on the side here. I feel like with my hair down in front, I look like Pete Wentz a lot. So we'll see. I need it, like, you know, but I need, if people have ideas for what a Europa haircut would look like, that would be great.
You know? I'm almost to a play on words where it's like you and then rope and then This is why I'm not a hairdresser.
Internet, I'll take that under advisement.
Also, when you did become the internet sensation, another thing that everyone was talking about was the fact that you had so many marriage proposals. Like, your Twitter feed was just flooded with women wanting to marry you.
Yeah.
That's pretty shit.
It's pretty great. I feel like I missed a lot of it. I think we were so busy right after landing that I saw some of it. But I feel like there was a lot of missed connections that late. So, unfortunately, married.
I saw a meme, you know, the classic one, with you in the blue shirt and the headset. And it was like, the internet, the women, you know, the women on the internet have fallen in love with me. Too busy to even notice. And you're like, yeah. But you know what? The people do love you big time. And my favorite thing that I have found stumbling across the internet is that people love to draw you. There's a lot of drawings.
There's some pretty good ones, yeah.
So I was going to go through, this is a little bit, you know, fun for Dowsy Facts, but I was going to go through some of these pictures and just rate them, and if you've seen them as well. So this one's like the anime kind of version of you.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
We have, the blue shirt comes in big time. If we've got this is the you know, the mohawk haircut, and you're obviously speaking, which is my favorite part because you can see. Yeah.
They've done a good job.
And then I think in the next one, you are actually a Jedi. Someone has painted you as a Jedi. Yes.
As I'm gazing out in the stars, I love it.
Hotel bathrobe.
You're rocking the bathrobe in that one. But again, good mo. And then the last one, I think someone made up like a bit of a magazine.
There is it's a Geek a Week card set that you can
get.
So put this together. I like this one. He asked me what look I should have, and I was like, I want to look like I'm awestruck by looking at the stars. So hopefully that's
Yeah,
that's
nailed
good.
It.
Yeah.
That's needed. Hold on, can you give us that one in the flesh? Can you show me that?
I don't like the turbo. I don't know. I feel like I'm smiling too much now.
Yeah, please stop having fun.
Ah, the worst.
We got another one here. Whoops, this one. I like this one because it's actually a meme, so it twinkles. The stars twinkle.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
Someone printed this out, and we have our names in our offices, and then there's like a little icon next to it, and someone put this in my icon as for my office. So now it has that little picture there. It's a very heavy 5 o'clock shadow in this one. That's a case, maybe.
That one would have to be my personal favorite.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And there is a Tumblr page called Fuck Yeah, Bye Back.
That was surreal. Someone's like, oh, you have a Tumblr. I'm like, what?
Yeah, and there's like 59 pages of stuff all about you that someone is just hell time. Like,
I met her. I met her. Super nice woman. We met up in Seattle. She was very, very sweet.
Did she propose to you?
She didn't. She was with somebody. Probably would not have approved of that.
What is something that you have stumbled across on the internet about you that's either been not true or just completely at whack?
Oh, I feel like it's been pretty good so far. I got a tweet one time where somebody was like, I had hit on their girlfriend, and I was like, I know, and it was like in a very specific location, like somewhere in D.C., at some like outside of some club, where I was trying to go see Thievery Corporation perform. And I was like, I'm so certain I didn't hit on your girlfriend because I was hanging out with two guys, and we were all just trying to get into the show. So if I hit on anybody, it was just to flirt with them, be like, can I get a ticket? So unless his girlfriend was the ticket lady, maybe then. But
maybe she give him a bit of a relationship advice and just be like, don't worry about me. Maybe you're an insecure person, and this is actually going to be the demise of your relationship, and everyone's following. All right, I like that. I'll put that in the fun for Dusty Facts. You are a serial flirt. Well, there you go. Fun for Dusty Facts. Number one, you share a birthday with my mum.
Yay!
Yay! That's important. The 7th of November. So
that's right.
That means I can never, ever forget yours now, and I've got no excuse. So
that's
if you don't
true. Have a birthday, I will hold that against you for the rest of your life now. You forget my birthday.
Another fact, a fun fact, is that Obama knows who you are and says that you're really cool and almost threatened to get a mohawk himself. Is that true?
That's true. He said that he called the team the week after landing to congratulate us, and he made the comment that he was considering getting a mohawk had he known it would been so cool. So that was just a very strange moment in my life. And I've had the chance to meet him very awkwardly, introduced myself to him. So the short version of the story is I had been invited to be the First Lady's guest at the State of the Union. And kind of at the end of it, I think they had sort of waited to see, because, you know, obviously the president's just given a long speech, and he's kind of probably prepared for the speech all day and everything else, so he's kind of tired. So I think they were waiting to see if he was up for meeting the guests. Sure enough, you know, you have this opportunity. They said, you know, come this way, and they give you a card when you when you go to meet like the First Lady or the President. You have a little card that you has your name and your title on, and you hand it to like a Marine officer who then kind of announces you to the room. So like the old, you know, like the old courts, you know, like the Duke of so and so is arriving. Yeah. So they do this thing for you, and so I remember handing it to the guy, and the gentleman kind of starts to announce me, and the president says, I know who this guy is. And I panic, because I had been thinking, like, oh, how do I greet the president? You handshake, you fist bump, you kind of like do that little pat on the back hug. And I panic when he says, I know who this guy is. And I walk up to the president, and I just go, my man!
Ah!
And I just sheer moment of terror. I just said to the leader of the free world, like, my man. Luckily, he was very graceful and like pat me on the shoulder, gave me a nice hello, and was very nice about it. But we ended up talking for a little bit. But it was just kind of like, that's how I met the president.
Oh, that's so good. Another fun Fidelity fact: you are a mad Trekkie.
Yes.
Love you, Star Trek. Yes.
I am obsessed. In fact, Star Trek: The Next Generation. Is one of the big reasons why I work on NASA. I think that Gene Roddenberry had this great vision of, you know, what the future of mankind should be in space exploration, a very positive, right? Even with the original show, you had the Russians and the Americans getting together, and, you know, in the Next Generation, you had this, like, what does it mean to be human aspect of it, and I love that. Like, I think that's a big reason why probably a lot of people at NASA kind of work in space stuff, because they love Star Trek growing up in some way or another. And in fact, we're having a panel at Star Trek Las Vegas this year on from Star Trek to the Stars, and like people who have been inspired by Star Trek to work at NASA stuff. So,
oh, wow. Fun. It's funny because I saw a few photos of you dressed up, you know, as an engineer, blue shirt and a red shirt, and you even had a matching pattern in the mohawk on the side.
I did. I had the Star Trek Delta. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was Comic-Con last year.
So I stumbled across those photos, and I've just looked in the background of your room.
Oh, there's that is a Star Trek book just above my head.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, come on, too good.
Too easy.
What else have you got back there? This is fun. You do have, you've got Settlers of Catan. You have, let's have a squeeze here.
I turn around, but I have like Pandemic.
Is it like a board game version of Pandemic? How does that work? Because I just remember playing it online, and it's like Madagascar shut down everything. Like, is it sort of the same thing?
It's a team. I like these games, especially Pandemic and a couple like Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert. I like these games because they're cooperative board games. And so even though I have a very competitive side, which sometimes is not the best when you play board games, you get very angry and irate. If you've ever played Risk, I hate Risk. Because
Risk is like one of my favorite games.
No, it's the worst because you know the outcome of the game basically at the first start. At the beginning of the game, you're like, I know I'm going to lose. And then I have to play for 2 hours to figure out how badly I'm going to lose. So I like these cooperative games where I'm like, oh, everybody helps each other and you have to pass like you know, cures off to people, and it's a little bit maybe not necessarily my personality, but probably healthier for me to not yell and scream during Monopoly.
And you've spent quite a bit of time with the Tabletop Crew as well for Geek.
I have.
Yeah,
it's really fun. It's such a great group of people. Speaking of November 7th birthdays, Boyan, who helps run that show, Tabletop, is also a November 7th birthday. So it's a, you know, it's a good day to be born, I guess. So, you know, I love it. I like tabletop gaming, I think, in large part because it's just, it's a nice social interaction. It's nice to kind of hang out with your friends and, you know, have a beer and kind of play games together.
You love your board games. You've got, you have had serious WoW addictions by the sounds
of things. Yeah, there's a Diablo on the other side here that you can see. I'm kind of a Blizzard fan, I guess. Yeah.
And that's signed by, who's that? I can see.
That's signed by the a lot of the programmers and some of the voice talent and designers and everything of that game. They had a release party a month ago or a little bit over a month ago. I wanted to get it signed because I thought it was really cool what they had done. It was kind of fun because a lot of them, you know, were like, oh, I love NASA, I love what you guys do. And I'm like, this is great. We should all hang out.
Yeah, we're all friends. Do you find, though, that within the geek community, when you do have similar interests like this, everyone's kind of more inviting?
It's very nice, I think. Well, I think in general, everybody that I've kind of interacted with in the geek community has been so welcoming and friendly. And it's just like, it's a really awesome group of people. Maybe, you know, I don't know if all of us had the exact same experience growing up, but it's nice to finally find a group of people that you share so much in common with. I remember, you know, speaking of my love of Star Trek, I just remember as a kid, nobody talking about Star Trek in school. And, you know, now I have so many friends who love Star Trek. But it's, you know, I think, you know, as kind of Will Wheaton says, it's also the way we love things, and it's kind of a great thing. Like, even though, for example, I don't play Zelda, kind of I get how you feel about it. And I think that's kind of a cool thing about this community, is that people, you know, people sort of get it. They have the same love of something, even though it's not the same thing as the other people. And so it's a bonding experience.
Well, in a way, everyone's a geek about something. You know,
yeah.
You can be a geek about geeky things, or you can be a geek about space, or you can be a geek about football.
Yeah, I'm that way about baseball, because I love...
You like baseball?
I love baseball. I grew up playing Little League. And then now I love the statistical part of baseball. Like, I get into the numbers, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is an interesting metric about a baseball player. It tells me something. So, and it's fun because there's enough games where you can learn stuff about baseball players.
Who do you go for?
I'm an Oakland A's fan. It's my home team. Yeah, Billy B, which is also probably most famous for the Moneyball. Which is a, you know, statistical analysis of players and trying to find the players with, you know, relatively low cost and high value.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I don't speak sport. I tried. I actually love going to live sports events. So I saw the NBA in Chicago and I had a really good time. And I've seen the baseball. I saw the Dodgers play against the Angels.
Perfect.
And there's a guy called Pujols.
Right.
That alone was worth it for me. We've got a few questions that are coming in also, so we'll take it back to the cool kids that want to have a chat skis.
Yeah.
We have Dusty Rain. Hi there, Dusty, who's watching on the YouTube channel, tweets to say, has anyone told you, and I'm going to guess yes, but has anyone told you that you look a lot like Zachary Quinto?
Yes. And in fact, there was a little, I remember after right after landing, there was a little, you know, online kind of website or whatever that had said, like, who would play who in the Curiosity movie? And, of course, Zachary Quinto was named as the person who would play me in the movie. I think it's awesome. Also, how cool is it that he plays Spock in Star Trek? I'm like, this is perfect.
So, Success yeah. circle. Have you met him yet?
I haven't. He seems like a cool guy. I'd like to. Yeah, at some point. I'm sure it'll happen.
Yeah. Because you do a lot of the conventions and you do a lot of panels. What are some of the things that you've got lined up?
So I think I have... we'll see what... I proposed stuff, and NASA proposed stuff for Comic-Con, so hopefully one or two of those panels shows up. And then there's the one in Star Trek Las Vegas. I'm going to Hawaii-Con in September. I think that'll be a lot of fun. There's a lot of stuff planned for that one. And then, like, this next week, I'm going to the White House Science Fair, which is super exciting. There's a bunch of, you know, kids of all ages showing off their very cool science projects. They're doing stuff at, like, 14 and 15 that I was like, I was just sitting around watching TV at that age. So the fact that you guys are, you know, developing tests for cancer or, you know, algae that turns, you know, something into biofuel. I'm like, these guys are amazing. And then the following couple days, I'm doing the World Science Festival in New York. So we have a bunch of really fun science projects. Some of the art exhibits that I was telling you guys about earlier are going to be out there, and that's all around the city. So people who are in New York should come check it out. That'd be fun.
So if you're going to Comic-Con, does that mean we're going to have dance floor dances again? Yay!
Yes. That's how we met. I remember just, like, kind of being awestruck by your dance moves.
I have a bad habit of starting dance floors, or when I'm on the dance floor, I'm in the zone. Like,
it was
amazing.
I don't
know what else is happening. There was a bit of robot.
Yeah. I feel like I've never seen a gorgeous girl just like, I'm full on into this dance. Like, who cares what's happening? So it was kind of amazing to watch.
Blinders on, I'm just like,
yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Mind you though, that like I will never ever forget, and I've said this a few times, like there was a stage at this Comic Con after party for Nerd HQ, and I just looked around. I think I'd bought a drink at the bar, and then looked next to me, and it was Joss Whedon, and I was like, I gave him a hug and I whispered in his ear, that's just for Firefly. And then I turned around and then Loki, Tom Hiddleston, is like doing the drop kicking dancing. And then you had like Matt Smith there and like everywhere you looked, I was just like,
I know exactly what you feel like. I remember being in like a random like dance circle at one point and being like, I see all of you on TV and things that I love. Yeah.
Did you chuck a Maud, and did you embarrass yourself by talking to anyone and like?
I didn't. I should have. I should have embarrassed myself more.
Okay.
I didn't. I'm very shy.
I owe Sam Witwer an apology because he was just sitting on the couch talking like for 2 hours, and I went to the bathroom and I came back and he was still there, and I just kind of yelled at him, "Why aren't you dancing?" And he was just like "You are interrupting my conversation," kind of thing. And I was like, I just think that
he and I have become very good friends, and he is one of the funniest guys that I know. And just comically good looking. But yeah, he's such a great guy, and so I'm sure he has, you know, he has no.
No, it was me being a brat, being like, stop talking and get on the dance floor, and he's like, hold on, like, whoa, there's a drunk, sweaty girl yelling at me. Oh, yeah. That was my little stop embarrassing yourself. So I'm looking forward to having some more dances happening. We've got another question. It is from the Pale Blue 59, and he wants to know, has working at NASA completely ruined every sci-fi movie or TV show for you?
Not at all. I still love sci-fi. In fact, I watched a little Star Trek earlier today. yesterday was the 20th anniversary of the Next Generation finale, so I was like, I should watch the finale. I did. Got a little choked up. But no, I still love sci-fi. I mean, it's, you know, any good movie takes you out of the you know, the element of being over-analytical. There's some movies where, you know, it's a little too crazy, and I'm like, oh, that's not. And that's usually movies that are kind of like in the current era, but then like their technology does crazy things. You know, so if it's like a 2010 movie and it's, but it's like some very crazy technology, that stuff kind of gets me. But usually if it's like sci-fi in the future, I'm all on board. And even movies like Gravity, where there was, you know, some scientific inaccuracy.
Like what?
I was totally immersed in that movie. I don't want to ruin it for people. No, but there's, you know, this, so, you know, there's a satellite strike and it creates debris, and then the debris comes and kind of it has a chain reaction of debris, and then it intersects with the space station. But, you know, the reality of the way satellites work is that it's not so easy. It's not every 90 minutes, because you're not all in the same orbit. You're in different orbits at different angles. But, you know, it's a storytelling, you know, it's a great storytelling of that in that movie. But who wants to watch, you know, a four-hour movie that goes into, you know, the complexities of orbital mechanics and, you know, watch Sandra Bullock do complex equations to calculate the next time that she's going to see this orbital debris. So, I mean, like, I love that movie. I think it's gripping, it's tense, and as soon as you start watching it, I kind of forget about the fact that it's, you know, got some flaws, because it's telling the story so well.
What movies that are sci-fi movies have you, do you think, get it the best, that really kind of nailed it?
So 2001, 2010, those, like, a lot of the movies that are based on Arthur C. Clarke work, they're really accurate, because Arthur C. Clarke was one of the fantastic science fiction writer, but two, was a devout student of engineering, and I believe a member of the Royal Astronomy Society, so he knew his stuff. And so, you know, when he talks about how we're going to get to Jupiter and there's aerobraking and things like that, that's stuff that we would really do, you know, when we go to Jupiter. So he's got a lot of that technology and the approach right, so that's kind of fun. I'm trying to think of other sci-fi movies that really, the ones that get it wrong are like Armageddon. It's just like left and right, just things that are happening. I'm like, this is not how this looks.
You need, like, a bullshit buzzer every time when you're watching the movie, and every time something's, you're just like, nah, bullshit.
I need that little button to press. I still kind of love that movie because it's very over the top, but I'm like,
and you don't want to miss a thing. You don't want to close your eyes. Don't want to fall asleep.
Oh my goodness.
That's like my karaoke song.
That's my favorite karaoke song to do.
What?
Don't miss it. Yeah.
I need to see that. I need to see that happen. You should come out for Korean barbecue and karaoke when we do that.
Yes.
Well, we'll have to fly back to LA sometime.
Yeah.
Definitely. Just for that. And then as soon as you drop mic, you get back on the plane. You're like, John, I cannot stop this moment. Ultraviolet Creations has sent in a message. Is there something that you really, really want to do, work or hobby-wise, that you haven't done yet?
I'm super fortunate that I get to work on this Europa mission, because Europa is one of the other places kind of in the solar system that I've always thought was just super cool, and kind of on that, I guess, on my, call it, exploration bucket list. So that's really awesome. I would love
to. You have an exploration bucket list?
I have an exploration bucket list. The other one's Venus. I really, just as an engineer, I know that scientifically, I think there's Venus isn't necessarily the most exciting destination in the solar system, but it's, as an engineer, I'm like, how do you deal with hot temperatures and like 800 degree surface and things like that? So how do you do all of this and make something last for more than a few minutes before it melts? And I really want to go, and I really want to see a Venus hot air balloon mission. We'd have like a kind of a Zeppelin that would float around the clouds of Venus. That would be a very cool mission. And then the next thing, so Europa is definitely one of the sites, but the other thing I would love to do, I mean, I think all of us would love to do, is send like a submersible, like a little submarine, to kind of go through the ice and then get into this subsurface ocean in Europa and kind of like look around in this ocean, because, you know, who knows what's underneath that ice. There's water, there's warmth, there's a rocky core, so there's, you know, that ocean has something to interact with, there's materials there for, you know, very possibly materials there for life. So maybe there's like all these little weird fishes swimming around that ocean. I want to know. So that'd be very cool.
What's so wrong with Star Wars? Why are you attracted?
Nothing's wrong with it. So they're both great. I love them a lot. Star Wars is a space soap opera. It's really fun. I enjoy it. But Star Trek, I love that piece.
Oh, it's a soap opera?
It's a space soap opera. No, I mean, there's elements of, you know, you have the whole Freudian philosophy, and there's people actually who teach classes on Star Wars and some of the philosophies that are, of course, incorporated. But Trek, for me, has, I think a lot of it is that vision for what it means to be human in the future. Like, what is the goal of our species? And I think I love this idea that we're coming together, that we're explorers, we want to learn about the universe. You know, and the show has always been very good about kind of interleaving our current state of science and knowledge with the future. So, you know, the warp drive stuff is based on some, you know, some physical thoughts that they really had, okay, about warping time and space. Wormholes that, you know, they show in the movies are real things that, you know, possibly could transport you from one part of the universe to the other. So they're all kind of based in some sort of scientific reality, and I think that's, for me, it's a little bit more of a scientific show. But I like I said, I love them both. I mean, I own Star Wars. I watched them many times. Not episode one. I have not watched that many times. But
the pod racing.
That movie is, like, oddly racist, or racial, I should say. It's like a very weird movie. The accents from various places in the world, and I'm like, these are, like, oh, there's an Eastern European and an Asian guy.
And yeah.
It's so weird that the entire universe, of all the places in the universe, people are going to sound like Asians.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the thing, you just don't know. That's like when we were talking about, you know, extraterrestrial matter. Like, we just have no idea. And I was kind of also thinking, didn't we kind of develop skin not only to keep all our organs in, but to protect us from the sun? So
definitely.
What if someone doesn't have sun? Do they need sun? Do they need light? Have they developed...
Well, that's a good question. And, like, you know, we find life at the bottom of the ocean where there's no sun. There's heat, you know, and there's water, and that's kind of one of the cool things again about Europa is that we have the same kind of ingredient. So it's possible. It's very, you know, that life there looks kind of almost alien in itself. If you look at the pictures of the stuff that lives kind of they live by thermal vents in the bottom of the ocean. And
the angelfish, it's got its own light attached
to it. Yeah. Like that.
Anglerfish. That's it. 10 points to Gryffindor.
Oh, are you Gryffindor?
Yeah, Slytherin, geez.
Oh, yeah, she's Slytherin. Oh, there you go, that's a good question. I'm on Pottermore and I got Gryffindor, so I'm going to stick with that. Where are you, Taz? What house would you be in?
Oh, that's even a question. It's Ravenclaw. I got Gryffindor and Pottermore as well, though, but that doesn't count. It's always, always been Ravenclaw.
Well, I mean, as it says, right, you know, if you believe it hard enough, so, like, the sorting hat will put you in the right house.
Exactly. That's what I like to think.
Yeah.
I'm still Gryffindor. Yeah, the best part about this is
Gryffindor, though. You can tell. You can just, you look at someone and you just know.
Yeah. I know, I did it the first time when you meet someone and you're like, straight away, the first thought that you have is, they are so Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff. I tease one of my coworkers about being Hufflepuff and she gets very upset about it.
You know what? Hufflepuff, wear it as a badge of honor, I say.
They're all, they're the sweetest people. They're the nicest people.
Yeah, they're loyal.
Yeah.
And they're good at finding things.
Yes, and they're lovely, you know? They're lovely.
Yeah.
Very nice. Gryffindor. What? I've got a question that I want to ask you. What is your IQ?
I have no idea what my IQ is. Never, never taken a test. I don't think it's that extraordinary. I think it's, you know, it's like probably like slightly above average, maybe.
Slightly above.
So what's average is 100?
Bullshit!
I think people overestimate the intelligence with the training and the, like, the experience. So I've had a lot of amazing experience. I've had the opportunity to work with really great people. But, like, I work with really smart people who I'm sure are very high IQs, and they make me feel kind of, you know, silly on a daily basis. So I think it's gonna be, you know, probably not that amazing. It's great though. I love work. I mean, like I said, it's kind of awesome to work with super smart people. And not, you know, and kind of learn new things every day. But I'm okay.
So Ravenclaw. Luke Harris has written in with a question. How often are you or your colleagues consulted on these science fiction games, movies, books, TV shows, or other entertainment mediums? Do you think it's important to be accurate in fiction?
So we have a couple people, Kevin Grazier, most famously, who worked, I worked very briefly on Cassini, but he has done the consulting for like Battlestar Galactica and a number of other science fiction shows, like Eureka and a couple other ones. So he's done a lot of that stuff. There's a few people who I think kind of have been consulted on the outside. I know that NASA's always really good about getting astronauts to people, like for the movie Gravity and things, so they can chat with them. I know Sandra Bullock talked to my friend Katie Coleman, who is an astronaut, about like what it's like to be in space. So they always have people like that. I think it's good to get some of it right. Obviously, for me, like things like Star Trek, I kind of love because I get so much of it right. But it's, the point of fiction is I like storytelling, and I want to watch a good movie and a good story over accurate science, any day. And so it's important to a level, but as long as it's not preposterous and it doesn't break that, suspension of disbelief, I just enjoy it.
I like to, this is like a very non-fictional, but David Attenborough, he helps me with my hangovers. His voice, his dulcet tones. And a shout out to Sandy Young, who is watching live, who says, "You don't seem at all hungover, Maud." "Well, I am, and here's the proof." "I ate this for breakfast."
I don't know what that is.
What is that? Yeah.
It wasn't delicious. No, that was an eggplant stack, like an eggplant lasagna.
Yeah, I don't like eggplant.
I need cheese, and I need to eat. I had that horrible moment. And shout out to Ultraviolet, who has tweeted in saying she's watching live as well. And Anissa Emily, there's a bunch of you guys. Dusty Rain, who, yes, you are not crazy. Okay, you're not crazy. He does look like Zachary Quinto. Quickly get in any last minute questions now because we're on our last 3 minutes. Lee, Taz, Slytherin, and Ravenclaw. I'm just going to see everyone in their Harry Potter house now at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
That's all I can see now. Have you got any first questions? Or when did you guys realize? Like, when did you guys?
I kind of have a question. Barback, do you watch anime at all?
I do.
Have you seen Planets at all?
I haven't. I grew up in Japan, so I watch a lot of the 90s era anime. So like Dragon Ball is huge. I have all the books in multiple editions. And then all of them on Blu-ray. I'm actually looking over it myself.
All over there. I've got a question about the DBZ then. What was your favorite? The Cell Saga or the Boo Saga?
I'm the Freezer Saga.
Freezer. Right, yeah. Early days.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's when he becomes the Super Saiyan. And I'm like, yes.
So. My favorite parts of I'll stop. The Ultimate Fighting Tournament before Boo comes in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was my favorite part.
Because I stopped at the Boo Saga because I'd had enough. I'm like, this is just going on too long. It's like every episode just drawled out.
That's a little weaker, that last part, yeah.
Yeah. And then they shrunk down to go into Boo's body. I was like...
It got ridiculous a little bit with the fusion and those kind of... I was like, okay. Mm.
Okay. I like the fusion. I liked Gotenks.
Gotenks, little kid. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right.
But yeah, when I went to like Super Saiyan 3, I think it was, I was just like... Yeah. My God.
Super Saiyan 4 is a bit more ridiculous, though, because kind of like they almost go back to...
And they put, like eyeshadow on. Super Saiyan 4 means I have eyeshadow. Like, what's happened?
What is Planets, though?
Planets is kind of, it focuses on like a team of guys who go out and they collect space debris, like they sort of salvage space debris like out in space.
Sounds like my jam, yeah.
And there's like it's got like a lot of human elements, and there's like a lot of socioeconomic and political themes going through it. So, like, it came out about 10 years ago, but it's got a pretty good rating. It's been pretty Yeah, but it's Planets with an ES at the end, so PLANETES.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Not what I expected.
And what game are you playing at the moment? We do a thing called Power, PWR. We say what we are playing, what we are watching, and what we are reading.
So I am playing Diablo 3 whenever I have free time. I'm reading Fall 4 still. And at the same time, I'm reading Gotham, which is a history of New York. It's like a 1,400-page book on the history of New York until 1898. It's kind of amazing. It's so much detail, and I love it. And for TV, I just finished. I caught up on Big Bang Theory, which I love.
Right. I've never seen an episode of Big Bang Theory. Fun fact.
Yeah, that is a fun fact.
What movies have you seen?
I finally just saw Captain America, Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. Really good. I really enjoyed that. I can't even remember the last movie. Oh, and the Lego movie. I just saw that too. That was also really good.
I loved the Lego
movie. I love the spaceship guy. I was like, ah, this guy. I get it.
The
<I get it.
laughs> <Spaceship! laughs> Cool. Don't forget, if you are on the YouTube channel, make sure you subscribe, like this video if you're digging what you see, and if you have seen Captain America Winter Soldier, check out the interviews that I did with the cast, Chris Evans, Scalio, Jerry Hansen, why won't I say her J in her name? It's a bad habit that I formed. And Samuel L. Jackson, who calls me out because he follows me on Twitter, and he looked at a photo and started a rumor, and I'm in trouble. Someone's girlfriend. Anyway, this has been Geeks Unleashed. Use that hashtag when talking about it. But basically what's going to happen is if you aren't watching this live, never fear. Babak, are you okay to kind of check in a week's time and answer any questions that
you missed? Yeah, definitely. Put it in the comments. Yeah.
Sweet! There you go. Q&A TBA. This has been Geeks Unleashed for Geek Bomb. And, ladies?
The bomb has been dropped.
That was a three. But you know what? Yeah. Explosions! Big sploosh. See ya!